It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I am told that we are both streams a-go-go. That means that we are streaming live on both the White Rose Society streams that go out to TuneIn and Stitcher, as well as on the HeadOn.live stream that goes out to HeadOn.live and FYINation.com. That's freaking awesome. It is the Tuesday, the 9th day of January 2018. This is The Horn, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and HeadOn.live are where we live. You can go to either site to reach the chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in to the merriment. You'll then be part of the madcap, berry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is Horn Chat during the 3 hours in which this program is live, namely 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, at least until daylight savings time, and then it'll be Eastern daylight time. And if you do that on this Tuesday, the 9th day of January 2018, you will be immediately greeted by Anatole early into the room, as well as by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a Spacing Guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. That was some football game last night, was it not? At least I thought it was. And yeah, it proved to be a damn nail biter, but cuticles notwithstanding, I'm none the worse for the wear. Maybe we'll talk about the young freshman Tua Tagovailoa's excessive Jesus thanking at some point in the program, or maybe we'll save that for tomorrow. But I had no idea that Tua Tagovailoa was Polynesian for Tim Tebow. Yeah, oh well. But that, roll tide, y'all, roll. And so now it's down to, for me at least, college basketball. And hey, my man, ixnay on the awkingte about the Mountaineers, mate. Don't they inks them, J-Obbe. Anyway, yeah. The Mountaineer basketball team has not been ranked as highly as it is right now since the 1959 season, when a young kid referred to, much to his consternation, by names like Zeke from Cabin Creek, Jerry West was in his, I think, junior season. I can't recall. I wasn't born, that's why I can't recall. But anyway, I got that going for me, which is good. So let's see. What do we do right off the top of the program? Well, let me do this, okay? Because it's not particularly effective when I do this when one of the streams isn't working. So, in light of the fact that all the streams are streaming as they apparently should be at this point in time. Let me say this now. If at some point, I mean, I'm here every night, Monday through Friday. Only on the rarest of circumstances am I not broadcasting. So if it should happen that you fire up TuneIn or Stitcher or something like that, and you do not hear this program, or it won't connect, what that means is that there has been a problem with the White Rose stream. Gosh, I'm hoping people will hear this and know, but if that's the case, then go ye over to headon.live, and yes, if you're on a mobile device or whatever, it will still work. Go over to headon.live, and you can pick up the stream there, HEADON.LIVE, okay? So since we've got all the streams working, maybe this will cut down on some of the confusion. I'm not taking the night off every time you go to tune in and you can't get the program. That just means the White Rose stream is down. But it's not down right now. But do at least please bookmark headon.live, if nothing else, then as a backup for when that stream isn't going. Okay? I hope that makes a little bit of sense. We have thanks to send out this evening. Oh, yes, we do, because we have subscribers. And this evening, we have thanks to send out to Kathleen in far frozen Minnesota. We have thanks to send out to Khalil in Texas. Thank you, Khalil. Thank you, Kathleen. And thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Gerald, just down the mountain a piece here in almost level west by Cold Trump, Virginia-stan. Thank you, Brother Deacon Gerald. And those are our subscribers for this, the ninth day of the month. Meanwhile, just 1 second here. Meanwhile, we have thanks to send out to our subscribers over at patreon.com. Thanks very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa and to Nick and Horst and Jeremy and Barb. Thanks to Karen and Kimberly, to Frank, our buddy Fab, to Matthew, to Rico, to Rocky, David, and Robin. Thank you one and all for being part of the Patreon campaign. It means a great deal. What we need to do, the goal at some point in time is to get the equivalent of 400 $10 a month subscribers. We are still a very, very long way away. The way we can do those subscribers, do the subscriptions, you've got a choice, either PayPal or Patreon. If you hate PayPal, you can always do it at Patreon, and maybe that's not quite so icky. But yes, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, or you can just click the little box at the under the contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com that says make this a recurring monthly donation. And as you can tell from the three subscribers that we have on the ninth day of the month, and the, 13 subscribers we have at Patreon, we need a whole lot more. So either way would be great. Remember, if you subscribe to Patreon, it all comes out on the first day of the month, not like the ninth as it would. PayPal, it comes out whenever you subscribe. Patreon just comes out first day of the month. And I will mention that this evening, the fundraising goal is $330. 33 at 10, 10 at 33, 1 at 330, 2 at 165, Oh, Jesus. Four at... $132.50. And after that, it gets really, really complicated. So we know how it goes with me and Cyphering. But we need to raise $330 this evening. And hopefully we won't wind up, like, you know, at the end of the week with some massive, monstrous, gigantic Friday on the Front Porch miracle number. Okay? Okay. So, head on over to either headon.live or headonradionetwork.com. At headonradionetwork.com, just click the Contribute tab, just click the PayPal button at headon.live, and hopefully that's how we will keep this process up and running now that we are in our 13th, that's right, 13th year. Okay? Okay. And thanks to everybody who keeps all of this going on. Because, well, it's independent, it's commercial-free. And based on the listening that I do, it's pretty darned well unique on either side of the political aisle. I don't care much for right-wing broadcasting, so I don't spend much time there. I spend hardly any time there. Who am I kidding? I value my brain. I don't want it leaking out my ear holes. But we're even unique on the progressive side of things. By the way, it's not... We went from a frozen hill to a sort of moderately squishy, thawed-out one. It's not going to be any problem to do the program this evening because it's a toasty 64 degrees here in the studio. And it got up into the 50s today, go figure. And actually, the mansion got too warm. Go figure. I was up and out early because it's cheap blood work Tuesday down at the local Sawbones, at the local Dock in a Box. So, you know, about every 3 months to 6 months, I go and get cheap blood work done, and we find out if we're still just maintaining things as we think they ought to be. So that was a lot of fun. Yeah. No, I am not, especially after biting my fingernails down to the quick and staying up much too late for my own good, crawling out at 6:30, you know, 6:30 in the morning, gagging with my neighbor's coal smoke, and then trundling my bulk down to the Dock in the Box makes for a sort of weirdly Bobbus Interruptus kind of day. But I had some running around I had to do, and got that all done, came home. Agnes and I, in what is becoming an afternoon ritual, sat and watched the White House press briefing together. And it's a little, you know, if you've got somebody you care about that you can watch that with, it makes it a little bit less odious, a little bit less nauseating, a little bit less painful. But the pain will never completely go away. Because there's just something about watching Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags stand there and lie with that sort of gimlet-eyed gaze that she balefully casts upon the assembled representatives of the despised First Amendment. There's something about it that's always going to be a little bit unsettling and off-putting. There's just no getting around it. Yeah, man. Oh, wow. What university? She started out the damn thing by saying, "Well, congratulations to the Crimson Tide. I mean, of course, I was a little bit bummed out that the University of Arkansas wasn't in the college football playoffs." In what universe does the University of Arkansas get into the college football playoffs with the record that the University of Arkansas had? That's like arguing that, well, oh, never mind. Sheesh. But there's no way there is no way that I ever would have made it through that afternoon press briefing if I had not had a handful of capsules fresh from the hardworking periodontic peripatetic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter. A handful of, that's right, Goulard Guar from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, will help you get through a massive demonstration of right-wing mendacity that might otherwise render you senseless and put you on the floor. Goulard Guar from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, is made with only the very finest proprietary blend of Guar. Yes, you've seen it in gum form. It's in your ice cream. It's in all kinds of dairy products. But, well, when you just take it all by itself in capsule form, it'll pick you up and throw you across the room. Goulard Guar from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, as I said, is a proprietary blend of Guar, and it will it is guaranteed to be GMO, non-GMO, gluten-free, cage-free, free-range, cruelty-free, vegan, and, of course, absolutely always gluten-free, yes, Goulard Guar from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, is the absolute finest Guar product, Guar nutritional supplement that you're likely to find anywhere in the radio market, which is where you go to find bullshit nutritional supplements, which, of course, this is. If you'll only pony up the $97.16 that it costs for a three-month supply of Goulard Guar, we will be happy to send you a little bundle of test strips so that in the privacy of your own hut, you'll be able to find out what we already knew before we ever even put it in the box and didn't ship it to you. That Goulard Guar from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, has absolutely no nutritional value whatsoever. That's right, it's just another bullshit nutritional supplement, because you can't be a real live, honest-to-goodness, professional radio program without a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle. You know, I've never cared much for Guar. I've put many a carton of ice cream back simply for having Guar in it. But thanks to Goulard Guar from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, well, doggone it, now I can get all the Guar I could possibly ever need. Goulard Guar from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter. Accept no substitutes, post no bills, this side up. COD, FOB, ICECREAMGUARGUM, Goulard Guar from Horn Nutraceuticals. Order yours today. Operators are not standing by. Meanwhile, labor man on his El Chato No Worko Linux computer wants to know, but Bob, does it help a boner? Well, have you ever seen how stiff ice cream is when you get it out of the... Yes, that's the Guar gum hard at work. By the way, labor man adds, FYI, folks, breaking news, Scrump is a Jagov and mental defective. You forgot to add unstable to that, labor man, but I could not help but agree, without a doubt. Albert from Rhode Island simply wants to know, Bob, what did you think of the game last night? It was pretty grim first half. Nothing was working. After that early interception, then to go down, and, well, I got a feeling that the most worried person on the Crimson Tide roster is not is not Jalen Hurts, who will probably now be the second string quarterback, but is in fact was the place kicker a senior? Because if he wasn't, he's probably going to be looking, I don't know, changing his major to something where he hopes to be able to have, actually make some money. Kid had a rough night last night. Marty says Bama deserved to lose that game. Missing two field goals from closer than 40 yards and not even close at that. I'm glad, though, that Bo Scarborough apparently, and see that, I was going to get there. If you were looking for a reason to root for the Crimson Tide, well, doggone it. There it was at the beginning of the game. You know, we discussed the fact that the unstable genius was going to be at the game, and he was. And he was met by no small amount of booing. But it was what happened in the tunnel beforehand. That sort of tickled me a little bit. Because, doggone it, Bo Scarborough, running back for the Crimson Tide, as they were making their way down the tunnel, yelled at the top of his lungs, "Fuck Trump!" So that everybody would be able to hear it, you know, like in, I don't know, Valdosta, Georgia. But the best part of it came in terms of the beginning of the game when they walked Tangerine Tiberius out onto the field for the presentation of the colors and the national anthem, which, of course, Geezer Disgustus has raised a great deal of kerfuffle about over the last several months. Who kneels, who stands, yada, yada, yada. And the camera caught him during the singing of the national anthem. Guess who doesn't know word number one of the national anthem? Okay, let's see. Just sitting here, 23 minutes past the hour. Oh, say, can you see? I haven't looked it up. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light? What so proudly we hailed? No. Anyway, it's not that. But it was the. And the rocket, and you could see his mouth form. Rockets, red glare, mumble, 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 Roseanne, Roseanne. Yeah. But the president, who has made such a stink of the national anthem, has no idea what the words are. Because, you know, it's never really meant anything to him. The United States has long existed for the Caratine Caligula as a support system for his relentless and avaricious attempt to acquire wealth, which, frankly, he hasn't been very good at. But it was there. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light? And then his mouth sort of closes and works a little bit like he's maybe moving work a popcorn haul out from between a couple of his teeth a little bit. But they're definitely not words. Yeah. Yeah, no, ramparts. No, no, no. A note coming in. Whenever Trump talks, it's flake news. Flake news, get it? Ah, wait a minute. A little jingle. But it gets worse. I heard that Joe R. Piehole is planning to run for U.S. Senate. Yes, yes, I'm afraid it's true. He's going to run for the seat being vacated by Jeff Flake. Meanwhile, Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman is still pondering her run for the seat that Kirsten Gillibrand and Kamala Harris and the other nice Christian ladies caused to be open and necessitated an interim replacement in Minnesota. Lovely, ain't it? Yeah. Oh, well, we've talked that to death. Scott and Punky noting Trump and the anthem. He doesn't care for the song, as he mistakenly believes the first line has to do with whether or not a Mexican has a good view of things. Jose, can you see? You're going to hell for that kind of thing, Scott. I thought we'd pretty well talked that out. Oh, well. Yeah. Oh, by the way, we have a new feature here at the Horn. We like to call it This Day in Horn History. Yes. For today's edition of This Day in Horn History, we're firing up the Wayback Machine and dialing it 9 years back to Friday, January 9th, 2009. Bob opens the show in a somber mood following the loss of a close family member the day before due to the lack of access to health care. He then moves on to deliver great news about a Tennessee Valley Authority power plant dumping 10,000 gallons of sludge, sludge pond poison, into Widows Creek, Alabama. Bob reports that the Bush administration has issued a ruling where illegal immigrants have no constitutional right to legal representation in the United States. Editorial, a rather ironic headline in light of today's announcement that the Trump regime is deporting 200,000 people back to one of the most dangerous places on earth, El Salvador. In a rear move, Bob moves on to the phones. Within 10 minutes into the program, Susan's calling in with her firebrand scathing criticism of the extraction industry, in this case, Massey Energy. Bob reports to the next caller that he's had an uptick in spam email, but this time it's the icky webcam porn, among others, including boner pills. Curiously enough, Bob doesn't consider the boner pill spam emails icky. That leads one to believe that Bob was thinking about starting Horn Nutraceuticals way back in 2009. Bob says his absence last night wasn't about watching football, but rather it was due to technical problems. In the studio, he says he wouldn't watch the game because he can't stand the Big 12, especially Oklahoma. Editorial, one wonders if Bob can't stand WVU either, not like they've ever been part of the Big 12. I still despise the Big 12. I'll add that editorially. I do. I think it's a sham of a conference that plays about one half of the game of football. It's Oklahoma and 11 other teams. And, well, we saw what playing those 11 other teams did for Oklahoma when they tangled with Georgia. Sort of takes the shine off of that, some of the shine off of that Heisman that feller won there out at OU. But anyway, no, I don't care for the Big 12, and the day that WVU gets out of the Big 12 will be a happy day for me. Damn it, we belong in the SEC, and Missouri needs to be in the Big 12. It makes geographic sense. It just makes sense, but that's enough of that. Bob then congratulates Mike Malloy for topping the 2008 list of favorite liberal talk show hosts by a landslide ahead of distant number two, billed as the smartest guy in liberal talk radio. In an effort to explain his Southern sentiment, Bob explains, "Bless your heart," is possum country speak for "Jesus Christ, what a fucking loser." That sentiment is not necessarily directed towards the number one liberal talk show host on said list. No, of course not. Later on in the program, in a reference to dim leaders and book crisis, Bob plays a clip of a fictional character named Jimmy James, the obtuse CEO of Jimmy James Incorporated, who from the TV show News Radio, who in the face of a flopped autobiography book in the U.S. titled Jimmy James, Capitalist Lion Tamer, has it translated into Japanese where it sells like hotcakes. He then decides to translate the book back into English, hoping it will have better prospects in the U.S. this time around. Lost in translation, the title of the book is translated back into English as Jimmy James, Macho Business Donkey Wrestler. Editorial. Ironically, with zero knowledge of all of this buried in the Hornback catalog, I was talking to Bob about that very character only a couple of days ago. Many days no business come my hut. Yes, one of my favorite comedy clips of all time, right up there with the Mary Tyler Moore episode of Chuckles the Clown. In light of the recent revelations in the book Fire and Fury, it almost seems like the collective consciousness that is the Horn community congregation saw all of this current madness coming all the way back in January 2009. And that's a look into this day in Horn history for January the 9th, 2018. Okay, and thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for clearing that up. Trump does, too, know the national anthem. It's called State Anthem of Russian Federation. That's about the damn size of it. Yep. A note coming in from Clarence, subject line, a fitting moniker. Bob, here's another name that can be bestowed upon Trump. He is the Mendacious Marmalade Malcontent. Well, if that doesn't get a cowbell, I don't know what name it does. The Mendacious Marmalade Malcontent. Please make a note of it. Okay, so that's all the shilly-shallying that goes with the beginning of the program. And it is 27 minutes before the hour. And so we have to ask the question, Quo Vadis? Whither goest thou? Or Quo Vadimus? Where are we going? Latin's so freaking cool. Because there's a lot of different opportunities out there. We know now, for instance, that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini has decided he wants to go to the great big meeting of swells and fabulous people in Davos. So he will. We can sort of just get the meds ready or the liquor bottles or whatever, because this will necessarily mean the Davos will be a mess, and, well, we will be embarrassed once again and, you know, more. Okay, a note coming in from Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana. I looked forward to listening to that football game all day. I don't have cable. And the orange fuckwad had to be there to spoil the whole damn thing for me. Then I listened to the radio all night and had to listen to the liberal media talk about how Donnie Dumbass was greeted by a mixed but mostly positive reaction. If that was mostly positive, I think there's a lot of booing going on. A whole lot of booing. But, you know, it was what it was, and like I said, it was worth the price of admission, and still is if you want to go and find that clip of Bo Scarborough yelling, fuck Trump. Which raises a new issue. It's a social issue. Doesn't mean it's inconsequential. How many members of the University of Alabama Crimson Tide football team will want to go to the White House to be congratulated by the mendacious marmalade malcontent. Also, my alert system on my various and sundry devices went absolutely hog wild earlier because there has apparently been some sort of palace coup over at that website that rhymes with light and fart. Yep. Steve Bannon is out, or as he was nicknamed in a truly mental tweet by the truly mental president, the stable genius, Sloppy Steve. And whatever you do, I want to be clear about this. This is not a tease. No. Whatever you do, do not, I repeat, do not look up Sloppy Steve in the Urban Dictionary. Just don't. But that's what, that's what Marcus Aurelius referred to him as, now that they're not friends anymore. Probably the biggest thing grabbing headlines today, though, is something that Senator Dianne Feinstein, who, of course, let's remember, is wildly insufficiently ideologically pure, released as a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. She released the transcript of the testimony that was given by the head of Fusion GPS to staff and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee in a closed-door meeting. The investigative staff, the highest placed investigating staff from the Republican and Democratic senators who make up the Senate Judiciary Committee, questioned Glenn Simpson, who is the co-founder of Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS is a Democratic Party-aligned research firm. Yes, they were involved with Hillary Clinton's 2006 presidential campaign. The devil! Who, nonetheless, we would still be manifestly better off if we had in the Oval Office right now. But I understand there are still people who can't quite get around to saying that. But anyway, they questioned Glenn Simpson for hours upon hours upon hours upon hours. All about Fusion GPS's role in the Steele dossier. You remember, that's the opposition research that included the allegations of Donald Trump and his pee-pee party there in a suite in Moscow, in which he paid hookers. And look, I believe the women, okay, in which he paid sex workers to urinate on a bed that had been slept in by Barack Obama and Michelle. Now, the Senate Judiciary Committee had Mr. Simpson in to interrogate him because of the considerable amount of controversy that the Steele dossier has generated. But people like Chuck Grassley of Iowa, well, and other Republicans have been making hay out of it, saying that, well, what we need to do here is investigate why people were compiling information about Donald J. Trump. Which leads one to think that somewhere along the way, Donald J. Trump's people have been provided with lots and lots of salacious information on people like Chuck Grassley or maybe Lindsey Graham down there at the ancestral estate of Smoldering Chode. And a lot of interesting information came out, but Chuck and Lindsey and folk didn't want that the transcripts to see the light of day, because then, of course, it would show that their entire machinations are nothing but a tissue of pathetic lies that are designed to cover up for the malfeasance of Donald Trump and the people around him. There were 9 hours of testimony on August the 22nd. And at one point in time, Jason Foster, who is a lawyer, Jason Foster, chief investigative counsel for Chairman Senator Chuck Grassley, put a question to Glenn Simpson asking him to explain what Fusion GPS did to determine whether or not the information in the Steele dossier was credible. To that question, Simpson demurred. And he did so saying that it was necessary to protect Christopher Steele's confidential sources that he had relied upon in putting this information together. Also, it's good to remember along the way that this whole thing was not started by Fusion GPS. It was picked up by Fusion GPS. It was actually begun by Republicans doing oppo research on Benito Cheeto. Okay, well, what came out of that is the fact that one person has already been killed because the dossier was published. And Glenn Simpson didn't want to see anybody else die. That's a hell of a thing to say. That there is a direct link between the death of a provider of information contained in the Steele dossier and the compilation of it. The question now becomes why people like Lindsey Graham and Chuck Grassley and God knows various and sundry other Republicans were so het up to make sure that this information didn't see the light of day. Because one of the things that they did find out is that, of course, Glenn Simpson said that he felt like it was necessary, and he went to the FBI. He felt it was necessary to go to the FBI with the information because he was afraid that a candidate for the presidency of the United States was being actively blackmailed by Russia. Now, long before Glenn Simpson did anything, Australian diplomatic officials had gone to the FBI with the same concerns after George Papadopoulos proved himself incapable of going toe-to-toe with a couple of Aussie diplomats, slagging back a few. And he got good and merlot up at what was apparently a wine bar in London. Oh, really? I know lots of Russians. There's lots of Russian stuff with Donald Trump. And I'm as important as Donald Trump and the Russians. And Russians, Donald Trump. Yeah. There have been a bunch of people getting all dead after the disclosure of the existence of the Steele dossier. Former KGB General Oleg Erovinkin got discovered all dead, sitting in the back seat of his car in December. It is believed by many that Erovinkin was one of Steele's sources. But, of course, General Oleg Erovinkin had a terrible, terrible case of onset of psoriasis in back seat of car, which caused holes to open in him looking like bullet holes, but was not bullet holes at all. It was terrible. There were things in his ears. I told you not to look, Asa. Regarding Sloppy Steve. Oh my God, Bob, I didn't know you could even do that during sexy time. Don't look. See, I tell you don't look, and it, but anyway, no. All kinds of people keep coming up dead. So this is capturing quite a bit of attention in the national consciousness today and this evening. And then, you know, there's references to that Simpson made as to a bank robbery in Kazakhstan. And the money from the bank robbery in Kazakhstan then got laundered through various and sundry countries. And then, lo and behold, might possibly be some of the money that showed up as financing for the Trump Soho hotel scheme. And right there is good old Felix Sater. S-A-T-E-R. Busted back in 1998 for his role in a mobbed-up stock scam, and who is now an internationally cooperating informant. In the transcripts, Simpson says, under oath, of course. So there was a civil case, at least one civil case in New York involving, filed by the city of Almaty against some alleged Kazakh money launderers. I don't remember exactly how, but we learned that it wasn't from Chris. We learned that Felix Sater had some connections with these people, and it's been more recently in the media that he's helping the government of Kazakhstan to recover this money. There's been media reports that the money went into Trump Soho, or it went into the company that built the Trump Soho. Oh, yeah. Donnie's mobbed up. But we're not surprised, are we? Well, I mean, you know, I guess maybe Jill Stein would be surprised, but no. And it's worth noting that Felix Sater and Dolt 45 have been engaged in business activities together going back, some 15 years back to when the Trump gang started renting office space to the former company that was run by Felix Sater. There's 300 and some odd pages of this stuff. And it just gets weirder and weirder. And bear in mind, whatever's there, it's a pretty good bet that Robert Mueller has it already too. Meanwhile, this transcript, Grassley and Lindsay worked double super extra bonus hard to try to keep the American people from finding out what they were trying to suppress. with Chuck Grassley out there slinging mud for all he's worth. Wajahat Ali, a contributing writer for the New York Times, tweeted earlier, Glenn Simpson testimony is not a good look on Grassley, Graham, Republicans, Trump, and the FBI. Why did they sit on all this info? Why did they only reveal Clinton email investigation? Why did Grassley Graham go after Steele, of all people? Then Andrew Desiderio noted that the people at Fusion GPS wanted the transcript released. And Andrew Desiderio said, Grassley tells the Daily Beast that the transcript shows Simpson was uncooperative. He was colluding with the Russians. He was colluding with the Democrats, and he was all the time denying those things. The only thing is, that's not true. It's not even remotely true. So you have to ask yourself, why are these Republicans working so hard to keep this out of the light? Which might in turn lead you to ask yourself, I wonder why it is, and I think it's okay to keep asking this question. Wonder why it is that there was mention at the same time that the news came out that the DNC had been hacked, word came out that the RNC had been hacked, but then that just quietly drifted away. Nothing to see here. These are not the Russian dupes you're looking for. Why is that? And now that Dianne Feinstein, who, remember, is deeply insufficiently ideologically pure. I mean, we can't forget how ideologically impure Dianne Feinstein is. So no matter any good that she does, just remember, she's really, really insufficiently ideologically pure. But one has to wonder wonder just exactly what the folks who have the dirt are going to do. And Lindsey Graham is the real oddball in this. This morning, without reaching any conclusions, as I was getting ready to go and get bled down a pint, I watched a collage that was run on Morning Joe of the various and sundry unkind things that Lindsey Graham had said about Donald Trump. And then there was a blunt edit of him trying to get his nose so far up Trump's ass that you can see Lindsey's smiling face when Trump opens his mouth to try to sing the national anthem. And bless his heart. See this day in horn history. Bless his heart. Lindsey can't say nice enough things about Donald Trump now for some reason or another. He's a great president. Yes. And Joe couldn't quite make the connection. I'll make the connection here. What do they have on Lindsey? What do they have on Chuck? What do they have on Orrin Hatch? And now all of a sudden, Orrin Hatch isn't going to run for re-election, and the door is open to Bishop Willard Romney and his wife and her horse. Now, Rafalka, there's a stable genius. I mean, you got to be one lucky horse to be kept by the... Well, I don't know. That horse is too big to strap to the roof of a car, isn't it? Yes, we're going to be talking about that again in 2018, too, because no way is Bishop Willard Romney going to run for Senate in the state of Utah and not have the world reminded, at least not if I have anything to do with it, of what a manifestly awful member of the human race he is. But when you look at these seedy old white men and you start wondering what in God's name kind of awful shit say the Russians have on them, well, dang. It's enough to put you off your evening din-din when you think about the way Republicans go about getting their jollies and so forth. Hypocritically, mind you. Representative Ted Lieu said, Fusion GPS transcript shows that what Senators Grassley and Graham did last week in publicly referring Christopher Steele for criminal investigation was, at best, a partisan publicity stunt and, at worst, intentionally designed to mislead the American people. That's a pretty good expression of it. They tried to get out in front of what they knew was coming to try to discredit Christopher Steele before the filth got out about what they'd been trying to hide from the American people. Did I mention that it's Titanic Tuesday? Because it is. It really, really is. And although he may not be in particularly good stead with Marcus Aurelius, Attorney General of the United States of America, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, he's got plans for the office of Attorney General, and among other things, he wants U.S. attorneys to start arguing for the death penalty more. The Trump administration, according to an article in the Wall Street Journal, plans to start greenlighting more death penalty cases. A source at the Justice Department said that Attorney General Sessions sees capital punishment as a valuable tool in the tool belt. Mm-hmm. Yes. Among other things, this past Monday, it was made clear that Sessions was supporting the death penalty against Billy Arnold, accused of killing two gang members in a rival crew. The crimes were committed in Michigan. Michigan doesn't have the death penalty, but Sessions wants to step in and federalize the case and see if he can't execute Billy Arnold. He's also hot and bothered to kill Jarvis Wayne Madison, who allegedly kidnapped and murdered his former wife back in 2016. And, of course, he wants to... He's giving serious consideration to pursuing the death penalty against Saifullo Saipov. That's the guy who ran over 8 people in October in New York City, running his truck through a bike lane. Now, bear in mind, as Newsweek points out, there have only been 3 federal executions since 1963. The last one was 2003. And just because it's the federal government doesn't mean the federal government's going to have an easier time finding some way to kill these people without running afoul of the constitutional prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment. But that's okay, because now that we've got Ann's boy Neil up there on the court, he can form a nice, tidy little majority along with Eagle-Eyed John Roberts and Sammy Bad Breath Alito and Slappy Thomas and that Kennedy guy, and they can go on their own little federal killing spree. Cool, right? No. Marty with a note says, I take it Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III won't be seeking the death penalty against Cloven Bundy. Well, how can he? That case got thrown out with prejudice, meaning that Cloven Bundy, let me tell you about the Negro. Cloven Bundy and all of his weirdo right-wing supporters who engaged in armed, seditious rebellion against the government of we the people trying to form that more perfect union, they get away with it. And it'll probably be a shining example to other gunned up members of the right wing that, well, maybe they can get away with it too. Meanwhile, note coming in from Michael and Madison, subject line, Rafalka, the Mormon, wait a minute, the Mormon Space Horse. Yes, Rafalka, the Mormon Space Horse. Bob, I, for one, look forward to Mitt Romney's inevitable return to the national spotlight. I'll finally get a chance to use my hashtag, which I had thought I'd invented 6 years too late. Hashtag Battlestar Rafalktica. Battlestar Rafalktica. I can't wait, Michael, and that's just my personal opinion. I think you're going to have a whale of a good time, or maybe you'll just be horsing around. See, I'm a stable genius. Shoo, buzzard, I ain't no dead horse. Wilbur. So that's the filibobster for this ninth day of January, 2018. And, golly, I think we've got a lot more yet to talk about. But, of course, it is a Tuesday. And so that, of course, means we've got the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen on the way. I look forward to that ever so much. Apparently, it's a quiet day out there in the Horn family community congregation. Oddly, the chat room is just, well, it's empty, save for Sparky and me. I didn't say I wasn't going to be on the air today. I have no idea what's going on. But we're there if you want to wander by. And maybe people are grieving grieving for the University of Georgia or something. I honest to God don't know. But anyway, well, there's Anatole coming back in. Hi, Anatole. I don't know where everybody went. Like I said, it's there for you. But we've got $330 to raise this evening. We are, of course, at zero. And it would be really nice if the fundraising goal didn't rise to $530 by, say, tomorrow. If we could take a bite out of this. Maybe if we could just wipe out the $130 from last night so it's just tonight and tomorrow? Is that possible? 13 at 10, 10 at 13, 1 at 130, something? Please. Yeah. And of course, the phone lines are open. You know the number, right? 304 574 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And that'll get you right into the program. And we will be chatting merrily away. So any way you want to go about it, you're more than mighty welcome to. And we'll see where the conversation takes us. This is listener-supported conversation radio. And I'm just little old Bob Kincaid. And we'll be right back. Enjoy the music. Enjoy the Green News Report.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There was sand and hills and rain. The first thing I met was a fly with a buzz and the sky with no clouds. The heat was hot and the ground was dry, but the air was full of sound. I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can't remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain.
La 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 la.
After 2 days in the desert sun, my skin began to turn red. After 3 days in the desert fun, I was looking at a riverbed. And the story it told of a river that flowed made me sad to think it was dead. You see, I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can't remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain.
Bye.
It's Tuesday, January 9, 2018.
The disaster has caused $306 billion in total damage.
2017 shatters record for costliest year ever for weather disasters in the United States.
Concern is growing that the burning tanker could explode and cause an environmental disaster.
Collision off the coast of China leaves oil tanker in flames. Opposition mobilizes against Trump's expansion of offshore drilling. Plus, Norway hits an inflection point on electric cars.
And not a moment too soon, all of those reports and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
There is a whopper of a storm hitting the East Coast right now. There hasn't been such an aggressive onslaught of white since Trump took office.
This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, more oil and more disaster now in the East China Sea.
Yes, indeed. In the East China Sea, there are fears of a growing environmental disaster after an Iranian oil tanker collided with a cargo ship over the weekend and caught fire. Nearly all of the oil tanker's crew are missing. One body has been recovered as of airtime, and the tanker is leaking oil condensate, an ultra-light kind of crude oil that is highly toxic and extremely flammable. In a BBC interview, oceanographer Simon Boxall of the University of Southampton said, if the ship sinks, it would be, quote, a time bomb on the seabed, as it slowly released the toxic condensate, killing fish across hundreds of square miles in the area.
I was struck by Boxall's quote where he said, it's not like crude, which does break down under natural microbial action. This stuff actually kills the microbes that break the oil down.
Yeah, it's really, really bad.
And if this condensate spills, this spill would be three times the size of the Exxon Valdez oil spill back in 1989.
Here in the U.S., the worst has passed for now for the Midwest and East Coast after an extreme cold event, followed by a powerful cyclone blizzard, followed by another extreme cold Arctic blast that brought the entire region to a standstill in California. The good news is the first storm of the rainy season has finally arrived after more than 200 days without significant rainfall. But the bad news is that it's bringing the threat of flash floods and landslides for areas that burned in the recent record-breaking wildfires in northern and southern California. These extreme weather disasters are also extremely expensive. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced on Monday that 2017 was the most expensive year on record for weather disasters in the U.S., costing $306 billion in total. That's more than $100 billion more than the previous record year, 2005.
And that was the year we had Hurricane Katrina. I mean, 2017 just shattered all of the records.
Yeah, from three record hurricanes, Harvey, Maria, and Irma, to tornado outbreaks and drought, to record deluges and record wildfires in the West, 2017 saw 16 weather events that each racked up more than $1 billion in financial losses.
No wonder you look so exhausted, Desi Doyen.
It's in line with climate scientists' predictions that climate change will bring more frequent extreme weather disasters, but it's also due in part to development into risky areas. That's according to Florida meteorologist Jeff Berardelli of WPEC in an interview on CBS.
The amount of billion-dollar events has doubled from an average of five back in the 1990s to an average of more than 10 now. And so we're seeing a combination, kind of a recipe for disaster. More extreme weather and people living in more exposed and vulnerable areas.
Well, it's only what you've been warning us about for 10 years or so on the Green News Report.
I tried. Meanwhile, California Governor Jerry Brown has joined Oregon and Washington's governors in vowing to block the Trump administration's plan to expand offshore oil and gas drilling to 90% of federal waters, including areas that have been off limits for decades, like California, Florida, the Atlantic, and the Arctic. Even some Republicans, like Florida Governor Rick Scott, oppose the plan. State attorneys general and dozens of environmental groups have also vowed to fight the expansion of drilling in court. California regulators may slow down that offshore expansion, however, because the state has authority over fossil fuel infrastructure within 3 miles of shore.
So California can say no to anything that is closer than 3 miles, and they can keep a pipeline from being built from those platforms back to shore.
Yes, they can.
And with oil as cheap as it is right now,
it probably wouldn't pay for them to have to ship it in and out instead of using a pipeline, unless something causes the price of oil to skyrocket.
There you go.
Just saying.
But finally, there is some good news. Norway has passed the inflection point when it comes to electric cars. Over half of all new cars sold in 2017 in Norway were all electric or hybrid cars, far outpacing conventional gasoline cars.
Oh, it's over. If you've got an internal combustion engine car you were hoping to sell, I'd say move quickly. Just saying.
There you go.
For much more on all of these reports and the stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
This little car means a heck of a lot to me.
This car
. 16 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday, the 9th day of January, 2018. This is The Horn. And let's continue, if you're game. And, well, okay. Just a couple more notes on this Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS transcript release. There's 312 pages to read through. And looks like a little light reading for the weekend, maybe. But there are various and sundry news organizations that are already reading for all they're worth. And one of the things that comes out of it all is that it's in the transcript that in fact someone inside the Trump campaign had tipped the FBI about the possibility of collusion with Russia. So no matter the louder that the Trump administration and Trump himself, no collusion, there's definitely no collusion. Believe me, there's no collusion. I don't even know what collusion is, but there isn't any of it because I'm a stable genius. The louder they holler that, the more certain it becomes that there is. Why? Because they're liars. Liars, right? Yeah. Among other things, as he testified, Glenn Simpson said that the FBI took the Steele dossier seriously because it did, in fact, as noted, it jibed with things that the FBI had already been learning. And in fact, Christopher Steele did meet in Rome with an official from the FBI. And they discussed what he had found. And then Steele told Fusion GPS about it. Glenn Simpson testified under oath. Essentially, what he told me was that they had other intelligence about this matter from an internal Trump campaign source. My understanding was that they believed Chris at this point, that they believed Chris's information might be credible because they had other intelligence that indicated the same thing, and one of those pieces of intelligence was a human source from, and let's turn on bold and underline and caps lock, was a human source from inside the Trump organization. Got that? Somebody was inside the Trump organization and worried about what was going on and already talking to the FBI. Papadopoulos. But who knows who it might have been? It might not have been just Papadopoulos. All of this stuff still has to come all the way out. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, is Chuck Grassley upset. Grassley's spokes creep, Taylor Foy, said, Her action, talking about Dianne Feinstein, who, of course, is really, really ideologically impure. I mean, she isn't anything remotely resembling progressive. She, you know, golly, she's terrible. She's just awful, awful, awful. So no matter what good things she does, we have to remember that that's just awful. Grassley spokescreep Taylor Foy said, her action undermines the integrity of the committee's oversight work and jeopardizes its ability to secure candid, voluntary testimony. No, it doesn't. You know what undermines the work of the committee? The chairman of the committee trying to take unreleased information and make and draw conclusions about it that are not true and then put it out for public consumption. What else? This else. Via CNN, a report that a couple more higher-ups inside the Trump administration may be casting side eyes at the door. Earther pointing out, as to Senator Feinstein, yeah, I don't like her very much, being all corporate-y, but I prefer her over any greedy old pasty whites. Greedy old pasty white Republicans, perhaps? Yeah. Prefer her over Lindsey Graham? Prefer her over Chuck Grassley? Prefer her over Burr of North Carolina? Maybe? Just possibly? Kinda? Sorta? Almost? Yeah. Hey, that means Earther's in the chat room. Cool. A few more folks wandering in. All Hung Like Jesus is there. So, yeah, good. A few more folks wandering in. That's always nice. No, those two higher ups, huh? Apparently, H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor, and White House Counsel Don McGahn are thinking maybe they've had enough. CNN stating the president, like with many of his advisors, has aired frustrations openly with both men. That means that both of them have been screamed at by the 2-year-old in the 71-year-old skin suit. Don McGahn's been operating in Washington, D.C. circles for a while and is probably not too crazy fond of being screamed at. And by the time you get the number of stars, the amount of jewelry that H.R. McMaster was allowed to wear on his military suit, he probably wasn't, he probably doesn't take too kindly to being screamed at either. But this is a screaming presidency. Because the president himself is screaming mad. And I don't mean angry. I mean knuckin' futs. But what makes this all even more complicated is that, well, for reasons that aren't abundantly clear, but you can probably take a solid running guess at, Don McGahn may wind up being a witness for Bob Mueller, at which point his ability to ethically, within the rules of ethics, go on being a lawyer for the White House becomes significantly compromised. There we go. Oh, there's one of those good Appalachian sayings, courtesy of Clarity. Crooked as dog's hind legs, them GOPers. You better believe it. So you got to wonder, The more that Donald Trump screams at the people around him, well, let's put it this way. Let's put it in human terms, not Trump terms. If you run around screaming at people, eventually, doesn't their willingness to put up with crap on your behalf become significantly compromised? You scream at them enough, eventually they start, they just stop on the way to work and pick up a pack of cigarettes because one of these days they know they're going to get to light up a smoke in the bunker. Yeah. So that's worth watching. That's well worth watching. Hey, great. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Robert in Australia. Hello, Bob. Okay, I'm dealing with exchange rates and with bills, so it's only $30 U.S. I'm paying the fees, so make sure you're not charged. Will do. And, by the way, it's a $30 challenge from up over down under. Robert says, I'm off for my daily walk and to get some drugs. Did I mention the 4 a.m. massive electrical storm that's knocked out power to thousands of people in New South Wales? Well, you'll get that with that Chinese hoax, Robert. Dadgummit. So thanks for making the challenge. There's a $30 challenge on the table, courtesy of Robert in Australia, who's had power, whose fellow Australians there in the Sydney area have been had power knocked out by a massive, massive, massive thunder and lightning storm. Strange. Did you see the photographs of snow in the Sahara? Okay, this is how a tired old DJ's mind works. I saw these beautiful photographs from a part of Algeria where cold air that was pushed across the Mediterranean from Europe caused precipitation in the form of snow in the Sahara. And so you see these wind-sculpted sand dunes of a sort of reddish orange. And they all have this rime of dusting of snow across them. And Algerian journalists ran out and began videoing it for posterity because it's like the third time it's happened in the last 100 years or something. It was gone almost immediately, but it was captured. And, well, more than that, some of that. It was pretty, that Chinese hoax that fell on the Algerian dunes of the Sahara. And it made me recall the fact that I was taught somewhere along the way in a geology or a geography class that once upon a time, the entire Sahara was a grassland. And that, in fact, that's probably where human beings first got a taste for the meat of the cow, and as well as for its milk, and that the nomadic tribal folks ran back and forth across the Sahara, hooting and hollering and chasing the cows, carrying spears and the like. And in point of fact, some of the world's great languages originated as Nilo-Saharan tongues. Two of them being Arabic and Hebrew. Go figure. What an interesting little world we live on. So, thank you for the challenge, Robert. Thank you very kindly indeed. Hopefully others will join in along the way. So that knocks the fundraising goal down to only $300. With only $100 to go to finish off last night's fundraising. It'd be awesome if some folks responded. Now there's since it is Titanic Tuesday and we do celebrate Titanic intellect, There's no more Titanic intellect out there than Alex Jones. Yep. He lost... you can't lose what you didn't ever had. So I can't say he lost his mind. Let's just say he had a conniption yesterday over all the attention that Oprah Winfrey was receiving after her speech at the Golden Globes on Sunday, which I didn't watch. But the speech I saw. And at one point in time, he referred to her. of course, he tweeted it and then he quickly deleted it. He referred to her as an absolute anti-human Nazi troll. Yes, as Arthur points out. Oh, yeah, the Oprah's a black Nazi theory. Yes, of course. The tweet stayed up for about an hour and then it disappeared. But there's no disappearing what he actually said, you know, on air. Here we go.
I have always broken down the fact that Oprah Winfrey is a top globalist, a top eugenicist, who pushes a one-world religion through her private foundation. She's even got a New Age movie coming out.
Now, if that one-world religion was, say, Christianity, would Alex Jones be opposed to a one-world religion? Because, I mean, pretty sure Oprah is some kind of Christian, but never mind. Tiny little itsy-bitsy microscopic minds of the people who listen to Alex Jones, she's probably actually an alien jellyfish monkey human hybrid, but never mind.
Brainwash the children. Well, they've readied her to run against Trump in 2020 and to fire that campaign up in about a year. But we know the secrets about Oprah Winfrey that they don't want you to know.
Oh, do you? That's right, secrets that occur and have been developed and learned only between my ears in the great vacuum space that exists between them.
There were Associated Press articles, London Guardian articles, ABC News articles, videos as well, that they pulled 8 years ago, 7 years ago when this news came out. We're going to break down why Oprah Winfrey will never be elected president of the United States because of the skeletons in her closet.
Considering who's in the White House now, the whole skeletons in the closet thing is kind of passé, isn't it? There's a question for us. As we move boldly into the future, is Donald Trump the exemplar of white male privilege? You know, for a long time we've cited that ancient maxim, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, it's okay if you're a Republican. But with regard to Donald Trump in particular, does he just get a pass for anything he wants to do because he's white and he's male? That seems to have been the operating philosophy for the majority of what passes for his adult life from all the way back when bone spurs kept him out of Vietnam to the more modern era when he sexually harassed, abused, or assaulted, is alleged to have, 13, 16 women gotten away with it, convinced enough people to vote for him for president that he could, via an old relic of our slaving past, become president of the United States, even though he admitted on to recorded media that he routinely sexually assaults women. Now, I'm not a member of the Oprah Winfrey Presidential Exploratory Committee. But when a pasty-faced, doughy old freak like Alex Jones says that skeletons in Oprah's closet will keep her from being president, does Oprah have skeletons that include sexual assault? Does she have skeletons that include evading compulsory military service? Does she have skeletons that include dealing with various and sundry international organized crime outfits in order to obtain funding for her projects? No, no, and no. Scott and Punky pointing out under the subject line, skeletons in the closet, Trump in the White House has shifted things when it comes to a future candidate being prohibited from being elected president. Thanks to Trump, skeletons in the closet will from now on lead the inauguration parade. In a way, I wish I agreed with you, Scott. But I'm not sure that I do. I think these standards will continue to apply to people who have a D after their name. And in particular, they will apply to women with a D after their name or people of color with a D after their name. Is our collective memory so short that we can't even remember Pastor Jeremiah Wright kerfuffle of the right wing, in which they actually challenged the Christianity of Barack Obama? Earthers think, now, she was rude with an intern because of bad coffee. Okay, I made that up. I got nothing. Now, look, if you're a human being, sooner or later, you're going to do things that you're not proud of. We all will. I mean, that's why the Christian's holy book has a verse in it that says, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." No major religious digressions on that. But it's a manifestation that everybody has stuff that they're ashamed of. Or at least not proud of. Said things, done things that upon mature reflection they wish they hadn't done. I dare say there's no one within the sound of my voice, myself included, who doesn't have a list. But there's a difference between that and whether or not one is allowed to have them and run for office. For me, the big question about Oprah Winfrey is, why in God's name would she want the job? We touched on this last night in a conversation with Jim. Why would you want the job? It seems pretty obvious to me what motivated Trump. I think if you're looking for one moment that motivated Trump to seek the presidency, it happens at that Washington Correspondents Association dinner when Barack Obama stood at the podium and absolutely flayed the pasty-faced, doughy white skin off of Donald Trump. Made him a laughingstock in front of a room full of journalists and glitterati. And he hates everybody for that moment. That's why he hates the fake news. Anybody remember whose table he was sitting at? Wasn't it a Fox News table? Aren't they the only media operation that he says anything good about? Everybody else, he hates. And that shit flows downhill. It rolls downhill because just today, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags got into it with Jim Acosta from CNN saying, I'm not going to negotiate with you. Jesus, they're disgusting. Meanwhile, Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana says, Jones, Beck, Hannity, and Rush Limbaugh always have news you're not going to hear anywhere else, maybe because it doesn't exist. To quote the great Mike Malloy, have I mentioned yet how much I hate these damn people? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, Jeff. Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah, Arthur says, yeah, thanks, Obama. Kind of wishing you hadn't done that, though. Yeah, but remember how we laughed? Remember how funny it was? Remember how absolutely hilarious it was when he said, yeah, now that you've seen my birth certificate, Don, maybe you can go back to the real important stuff you were working on, like figuring out who killed Biggie and Tupac. Man, that was a knee slapper. And he didn't like it at all. Trump didn't. And for reasons that are yet lingering in the stack for this Titanic Tuesday, we may yet pay a price for that cheap laugh. And that's not me gooning on Barack Obama. To this day, look, if the 24th Amendment hadn't been in place, and those debates had been not between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, but between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama would have destroyed him. They would have had to carry Donald Trump away in a goddamn basket. By the way, another example of why that is the worst idea in the entire United States Constitution, term limitations on the presidency. And even with Donald Trump in the White House, I will still say it, and I am absolutely convinced of the rightness of my position. I will not move from it. It is the single most anti-democratic thing in the entire document. The idea that no matter how good a president is, no matter how effective, no matter how badly needed, after two terms, see ya, bub, we're going to let somebody else take a run at it. I mean, think about Winston Churchill over in England during World War II. Prior to World War II, he had been humiliated, and all the extraneous stuff about Churchill, yes, 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 racist, 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 disgusting. But when it came time to stare down Adolf Hitler, it was decided that he, who had been warning them about Hitler for so long, was the guy for the job. So they gave him the primacy, and they let him lead Britain through its darkest hour and its finest hour. And then, just as quick as the Second World War was over, they said, see ya, Winnie! Because they knew that he would fuck up the peace. But in the United States, we don't even get that chance. Guess what? The stock market would still be soaring under Barack Obama. But, well, a lot of the other things that are sore wouldn't be. But this is probably not the time for discussing, trivialities like that. Marty says, primacy, didn't you mean moved into number 10? Yeah, prime minister, primacy. Yeah, see, yeah, right. Yeah. And Marty asks, would Bill Clinton have lost a W in 2000? Probably not. So once again, bad ideas somehow have a way of redounding to the detriment of Democrats. Every time the Electoral College fucks over an election, a Republican winds up in office. Reagan couldn't have gone through a third term because Reagan was knucking futs by the time he was at the end of his second. But the proscription of more than two, more the proscription of a third term for a president, remember, it's nothing but it is purely and simply a matter of it's the product of a fit of pique on the part of Republicans because they didn't ever want an FDR out there kicking their ass term after term after term after term. And they knew there would never be a Republican president great enough to warrant a third term. Eisenhower couldn't have handled a third term. He would have croaked. Nixon didn't make it through two. Bush couldn't win a second. W would not have been elected for a third. But there have been Democratic presidents we would gladly have seen for a third term and who would have won. But I guess this is a little bit like counting the silver in the middle of an air raid, isn't it? Let's run over and talk to our buddy Todd in South Carolina. Hey, Todd.
Yo, Bob, man. What's up?
What's happening, man?
Oh, I'm just listening to you preach. So, I have a question. Did you laugh out loud like some other people when you read that tweet over the weekend about like Trump being Wile E. Coyote, you know?
Oh, no, actually, I think I yelled, oh my fake sweet baby Jesus when I read the Stable Genius tweets. I mean, that was a series of like three tweets.
Oh, okay, that's right, because I'm not on Twitter, so I had to hear it. I had to hear someone read it. Now, I thought it was like an Onion type of, you know, I thought it was a satire. I thought it was satire, you know, because it was so outrageous. I don't know. I fucking laughed out loud myself. I laughed after I realized it was real. But then I got kind of depressed. You know, where is his family? Where is his family? This is the whole planet that he's in charge of in a way. You know, he's got to stop this shit.
He ain't gonna.
Well.
And by the way, I need to correct myself. I said 24th Amendment. I meant 22nd. They all run together after a while, but yeah.
Well, I mean, so, yeah. So you people won last night. That was interesting. I woke up. I checked it out. You guys were talking about overtime, so that was a good way to end it, right? Overtime?
I could have done with regulation, but somebody couldn't make a certain field goal.
Well, how about this business of pulling the quarterback, the first-string quarterback? That is gutsy. That is really just totally unconventional. But I guess he knew what was going on. It's like, you know what, you're not doing it tonight. You got to make some changes.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't see it as that tough a decision because Jalen Hurts wasn't getting the job done, and that meant that it couldn't have gotten much worse. You lose. They were losing. and the Georgia defense didn't have to respect Alabama's passing game because, well, Jalen Hurts isn't that much of a passer, and so that let them tee off on the running game and just pull their ears back and come after him every time he tried to run with the ball. And the game changed completely when that nice little Christian boy got hold of the football in the second half. And I say nice little Christian boy not because of ethnicity, but because, you know, he's a child.
No.
He's an 18-year-old kid.
We love Tebow here now. I think we have, what is it called, the Fireflies. All right, that's the minor league. They got a new little stadium in Colombia. And Tim Tebow, I don't know if they got rid of him yet or not. But he was there for a while. I mean, it was a big draw. You know, it plays in the South, you know. It plays in the South. What can you say?
Oh, Southerners love them some public displays of religion. Never mind, never mind what Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate rabbi, said about public displays of piety. Southerners love it.
It's so interesting because, to me, in a way, I mean, these folks are really, really what we would call Bible thumpers, you know, the real right-wing evangelicals. The way I understand Jesus, who was supposed to be Jesus, he wouldn't have anything to do with those people.
No, of course not.
But
it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, so we got to be careful with all this.
Okay, I know, and I'm not trying to believe it. It's just the Tebow thing said it all. Okay, right. So, what was the most outrageous thing on the news you heard today?
What was the most outrageous thing, what?
That you heard on the news today.
The one that's actually got me sitting here, I haven't mentioned it yet, but having a quiet little conniption, it's actually two stories.
Mm.
One of which I saw come across early this afternoon. The headline at The Guardian reads as follows. U.S. to loosen nuclear weapons constraints and develop more usable warheads.
That's not good.
New proposal is significantly more hawkish than Obama-era policy. Critics call development of new weapons dangerous Cold War thinking. Under the byline of Julian Borger in Washington. The bottom line is that, when he was nothing but candidate Trump, he famously asked, what's the point of having nuclear weapons, or infamously asked, what's the point of having nuclear weapons if you can't use them?
Yeah, that was sad.
Well, the Pentagon took him at his word, and now, Todd, they're working on a brand new, it's called the Nuclear Preparedness Report, the NPR, which is not the same as National Petroleum Radio. And for the first time in 8 years, the Pentagon is undertaking a brand new NPR. And because they know what the desires of the Commander-in-Chief are, the new nuclear posture review. I'm sorry, nuclear posture review. The new nuclear posture review prepared by the Pentagon envisages a modified version of the Trident D5 submarine launched missiles with only part of its normal warhead, with the intention of deterring Russia from using tactical warheads in a conflict in Eastern Europe. Bullshit. The purpose of that is to say, hey, look, Mr. President, we've got a little itty-bitty baby nuke, and if you want to, you can drop it right on Kim Jong Bad Haircut's head.
Right, exactly.
Because the other part of the two stories that have me kind of in a conniption is the fact that another trial balloon has gone up
mm-hmm.
to the effect that the White House is now considering a limited single strike on North Korea that they've somehow convinced themselves wouldn't constitute a preemptive attack on North Korea, but would be a sort of warning shot. Never mind the fact that the whole idea of a warning shot is that the shot doesn't hit the person you're shooting at. You can't square off 10 paces apart, shoot your opponent in the guts and say, that's a warning to you.
No.
But that's what these people are talking about. There's so much chaos swirling, and there's so much that's hard to keep up with. But son of a bitch, on the one hand, they're thinking, yeah, you know, maybe we can just, if we shoot at North Korea, they won't launch all those missiles at Seoul. Bullshit. Two, hey, maybe we could use, I mean, you know, he'd probably, look, it doesn't have to be one of those great, big, really humongous thermonuclear warheads. We could use one of the, we could make him a little bitty one. You know, kind of like giving a toddler a sparkler on the 4th of July instead of a fucking cherry bomb.
See, that's going to appease to his pea brain, and he's not going to understand it. It's like a mousetrap. When you set off one mousetrap, and there's a bunch of mousetraps all over the world. And
a nuke is a nuke is a nuke is a nuke.
Exactly.
To Donald J. Trump, he just wants to see one go off.
What about all that? I mean, come on. This just...
And anyway. hey, you know, it's on a submarine, so wasn't our submarine. We weren't anywhere near it. No, heck no. We don't have any nuclear submarines anymore. The Kenyan Muslim usurper sold all our submarines.
Matter of fact, he's in Hawaii and he did it. Because you know he's rich enough to have his own submarine. Right. You know, that kind of, yeah. So, and see, he's just pea-brained enough to believe that. Well, all we did was tear it down, sir. And it really won't hurt.
Wait a minute. Sing with me, Todd. We all live in a Kenyan submarine. A Kenyan submarine. A Kenyan submarine.
A Kenyan submarine.
We all live in a Muslim submarine. A Kenyan Muslim submarine. A Kenyan Muslim submarine.
Muslim submarine.
Oh, I'm giving us a cowbell for that.
Hey, that'll go down in history. And you hit the nail on the head. Just going reversing for a minute. It's etched in my brain watching that ceremony where Trump was. If you want to know what seething looks like in the dictionary, if there was a picture, Donald Trump sitting there hunched over with his face all beet red and kind of sweaty, and Obama all cool making fun of him on stage. You know, he was seething. He was literally seething. You could see it. And Wolf Blitzer, remember how he looked? What the hell was wrong with him that night? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. You know, I remember it very well. I think I watched it live.
Oh, I did, too. That's what stuck out. It was hilarious.
You know what? It's a great little comedy routine because Barack Obama was good at that. It wasn't just a fit of pique that kept Donald Trump from showing up there. It's that the guy isn't funny. He can't deliver a joke. The only thing he knows how to do is scowl at a camera and say, "You're fired." He's not a funny guy. Because the key to humor is wit. And Donald Trump doesn't have any wits. Wherever his wits were are hollow spaces that were, at some point in time, made dinner by the fucking spirochetes.
Got that right. Got that right. So that's the next issue. I don't know. It's two things going on. Last time we talked, you know, you brought up a good point. We were talking about, cannabis and this new thrust now by the administration and the Attorney General. And then we had that statement the other day by this guy from Kansas. I know, maybe it sounds like I'm speaking in abstract. I should be using people's names, but I just don't remember.
Oh, you're talking about Kansas State Representative Steve Alford?
Yeah. That is so pathetic. You know, he is one of the reasons why we are moving backwards. I mean, someone in that position to have that type of standing and platform to spew bullshit, because we have been dumbed down, as we keep saying, we've been dumbed down to the point now we're looking at two celebrities, you know, for president, only because people watch so much TV and they're so zoned out They're like, well, they must be good. They're on TV. I mean, literally, people say that. It's like that movie, Little Miss Sunshine. People are just mesmerized by the TV, you know. And that's kind of what that was about. Like, that little girl was just, I don't know if you saw Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah, I did. Yes.
Alan Arkin was in that. Yeah, I love that movie. You know, he went away too soon in that movie or whatever, but it was a wonderful movie.
Or any group of simpletons staring at a religious icon. It's the same. It's the same principle.
Same principle, exactly, exactly. To the point where if you're on TV, that legitimizes you to do anything, just because you're on that. You know, you're seen. So instead of your credentials, because all right, here's a real example. So the guy that I would talk to up the street at the convenience store, which I don't think I can engage in any political conversation with him anymore, because he got very animated the other day. And he went right into this. He's like, I told you, Hillary Clinton, they're investigating her now. The Clinton. And I mean, his eyes got big, and his little hair stood up. And I was like, oh, he looked a little crazy and shit. And I was like, okay. I said, good. If she broke the law, good. That's a good thing. I said, but we need to put the fire out that's burning now. And, you know, I was like, and anytime I brought anything up, he shut me down, you know, to the point where we got loud. And he wasn't even waiting on the customers, you know. So my point is that I was listening to him. I really didn't say too much. I just listened because it was so funny looking at him anyway. His whole affect, he was like looking all weird. But, you know, I get around on the dial and the radio or not. So he sounded like he had been sucking in Sean Hannity. I mean, like he was IVing, you know, Sean Hannity. Because that's all I could hear from him out of his mouth were those talking points from Fox News. And so I don't know where this is going to end, because people are entrenched. People are entrenched now. And no matter what the president does, this current president, as hard as it is for me to say that, if something happens to him, if anything happens to him, they're going to be irate, and they're already on edge. They know something's wrong. They know it, but they're not going to come out and say it. They know something's wrong, but they're going to look for any excuse to blame someone else, because that's what they'd like to do, is blame the other. Just like every morning on C-SPAN, why do you keep beating up on Trump? They're still saying give him a chance, you know. And it's like, well, why do you keep calling the car thief a criminal? Because he keeps stealing cars. Well, you know, what do you want people? What do you want the media to say about him and his administration? Oh, and this is the other thing. This is what I knew the guy was off, you know, the guy I would talk to about politics up the street. So I brought up cabinet members. I said, well, okay, well, look at the people he's appointed. I said, they don't know what they're doing in the job. They're not even appropriate for the job they're in. He said, okay, name one. I said, okay, Betsy DeVos, education. He said, well, we don't need a Department of Education anyway, because we should be homeschooled. And that doctorate of education, you can get that in 2 years. That's no real degree. And you know they rubbed me the wrong way when you said that shit. But I didn't know what I was dealing with then. So
Wait, slow down. So am I to understand that according to Cletus B. Cracker there in South Carolina, Stan, that you can just get out of high school and go get you an Ed D in 2 years?
That's what he said. He really believes that. He believes that.
So you don't actually have to go get the 4-year bachelor's and then the master's degree, and then you get. I mean, so maybe it is 2 years for an Ed D. I don't know.
No. Well, you know what? It might be if it's an online place somewhere in the third world,
but,
maybe.
But the point is, there's about six or seven years of post secondary education in front of that.
Well, I'm still trying to get my mind around his statement, but see, that's when I knew what I was dealing with, because I know for a, you know, this is like, I know everybody I know is in education, right? Higher level. You nowadays, come on, you can't even be a principal in a legitimate place without a doctorate, much less a superintendent, much less being the head of department of education. But you see, this is part of this whole philosophy where it's delegitimizing intellectualism. See, they have equated that with elitism. You know, so you have to break shit down to these dumb motherfuckers. You got to tell them, okay, so you need a hip replacement.
Why go through osteopathic
surgeon? What?
Yeah, but at this point, you got to break it down for them. But goddamn, we're talking about getting down to the subatomic level.
That's what I'm dealing with, Bob. That's what I'm dealing with.
But the thing is, you're carrying on a conversation with someone who...
I'm carrying what?
You're carrying on a conversation with someone who isn't capable of carrying his weight on the other side of that teeter-totter.
Which is why I said I cannot engage this type of conversation with this person anymore. Because they have no frame of reference. This shit is all fucked up. They have no foundation. I mean, and what am I supposed to do? Tell them, well, I'm sorry, man. You're just a pitiful dumbass, and it's amazing you even have a fucking job. You know?
And this is the guy who works down at the Rippy Mart, right?
Correct. Counting the change. And, I mean, you know, see him count the change. It's like, oh, that's a painting. Oh, Lord, that's a painting. Oh, my God. So, and he's not the only one. And let me tell you, he dummies up, man. When I bring up white supremacists and Klan and shit like that, you know, I'm like, why do you think all these people feel brazen to walk around and talk about blood and blood? And, you know, our whole country should have stopped for 2 days when those motherfuckers started talking about blood and soil. Literally. The whole country should have stopped and said, okay, we have to examine what's going on. We're having two days of national introspection. Report to your schools, libraries, and courthouses for seminars, blah, blah, blah. You know, serious. I'm not fucking around. I mean that. Because if people don't understand what that really means, I mean, they just gloss it over. Blood. That's no fucking play shit.
No, but see, I don't. This is one of those little traps that we fall into, Todd. I think if you provided a free Harvard education to the maggots, that it wouldn't make any difference, because you're not talking about intellect or intellectual response. You're talking about gut-level, visceral bias confirmation. Okay, see, I can read things on my side of the spectrum, and I can look at it and go, nope, that's bullshit. Let me give you an example. I tweeted this the other day. So I saw this this story, and it had a big splashy headline. Tom Hanks refuses presidential request with brilliant response. I went, well, I would have thought the Hollywood Reporter or Variety or, you know, the Busted Knuckle Tribune would have had that. But, okay, these guys have it. Let me go look. So understand that the headline was that Tom Hanks had directly refused a request made by Donald Trump.
Okay.
Well, I read through it, and what it was a story about, it started off with the banal premise that there's a movie theater in the White House so that the president and the president's family can watch first-run movies without having to go out to the theater. Okay, I know this to be true. Or I suspect it to be true, okay? And that some news outlet had interviewed Tom Hanks and said, Mr. Hanks, if President Trump asked you to provide a special screening of the new movie, The Post, would you do that? And in some interesting language, he said no. But at no point in time did Donald Trump or anybody from the White House ask Tom Hanks to host a private screening of The Post for Donald Trump. That simply did not happen. But the headline said it had. Now, as a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing, I can look at that and say, this is terrible writing, and it's even worse propaganda. Because it was designed to make people read the headline, not read the body of the article, and move on, and then start a lie. Get a lie. You know the old saying, a lie can go around the world before the truth gets its shoes on?
Right.
Well, that was designed to make people repeat the headline's lie when there was no actual truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you know, somebody from our side. Ostensibly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was immediately obvious that it was bullshit. It didn't happen at all. Now, the guy you're describing can't do what I just described. If he sees a headline that says Hillary Clinton seen sprinkling stevia on dead baby parts on cornflakes, he's off and running with it.
He's off and running, Bob. That's that person. Yes.
And what that is a function of the of higher reasoning and critical analysis. And he and a whole lot of people on both sides of the aisle can't do that. And I want to reiterate, on both sides of the aisle cannot engage in critical reasoning at that level. Because they read the headline and then they go through the body and they read it and it doesn't say it, but they still think, well, Tom Hanks told Donald Trump, fuck off. I love Tom Hanks.
Well, you know, critical thinking skills stopped being taught for, you know, a while ago, it seems like, in school. Unless you go to, you know, private school or whatever. But because there's a way you're supposed to read articles. And there's the way articles are written. You know, I don't even know if the pyramid system is still in effect. I don't know. That's, you know what I mean? The inverted pyramid.
And I then went and took part in, I engaged in a conversation with an old friend of mine, you know, talking about some of the dead giveaways. Now, I know if you're on social media and you get into it with a wingnut, and they don't know the difference between T-H-E-R-E, T-H-E-I-R, and T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E. You're not supposed to point that out because that makes you a grammar Nazi. And folks over on the left will tell you, you know, not, you know, spelling is like so elitist, dude. But the fact of the matter is, if you are looking at a legitimate piece of published media and it's full of misspells, that's actually a tell, Todd, that you're looking at bullshit. If it reads like the author is a student of English as a 14th language, that means most of the time that the content is suspect. If you cannot find a person's name associated with the article, another alarm bell. If it references things that it does not provide hyperlinks to, that's another strike against it. And what I'm describing, and what I'm describing here, these things are all elements of, and this is another case of a concept being hijacked, fake news. See, fake news, when the concept was first introduced, was introduced for the purpose of describing these very false stories that were used to propel a narrative that led to Trump becoming president. The Republicans and Trump then co-opted it and turned the phrase into something that means whatever factual reporting Donald Trump doesn't like. And it's the same thing that happens with any piece of worn-out language. Just as over here on our side. Neoliberal shill. Well, neoliberal is a word that means something. And it is a specific reference. It does not, however, mean anything that makes Jill Stein turn up her nose. It does not mean anything an ill-informed progressive doesn't like and doesn't understand. But of course, when you try to explain that to them, it simply becomes a feedback loop and you get called a neoliberal establishment shill for trying to explain to them that not everything they don't like is neoliberal. Got a hangnail. I got a fucking neoliberal hangnail, dude.
It's a hell of a predicament. It really is. Exactly. That little vortex you just made. It's like an eddy. You know an eddy, like when you're the side of a stream or a river?
Yeah, it's a hydraulic. Bloop, bloop,
bloop, bloop. Yep. Because, see, what you described, first of all, social media. In other words, Facebook is for, it's just what it is. It's people post their stuff on there. You know, it's like having a dossier about yourself or whatever. But for news, why the hell? You can get a suggestion about maybe where to go to look for something, but I understand how people think they're really getting news from social media. See, that's problem number one. Just stop that.
Right, over on our side, Todd, I can get shit for saying, well, you know, the New York Times reported blah blah. Fucking New York Times. They weren't fair to Bernie. Fuck the New York Times. Well, okay, and I can say, you know, fuck the New York Times because by orders of magnitude, how many more stories were there about her email at the same time that the New York Times had reason to know about the shit going on in the Steele dossier? But the New York Times still published the goddamn email stories. So, yeah, they don't have clean hands. But there is such a thing as fact reporting. A better example would be to go over to the Wall Street Journal. There's fact reporting at the Wall Street Journal, and then there's their goddamned opinion page. Their goddamned opinion page is a vile, filthy, toxic, septic sewer of hardcore right-wing vomit-inducing bilge. On the other hand, a reporter reporting on, say, the trial balloon being sent up by the White House over whether they might just launch a little itty-bitty limited attack on North Korea, that's a different thing. The news pages are not the opinion pages, and it used to be, at least, that there was a pretty clearly delineated fence between them.
Well,
but you also have to be able to read well enough to see if a fact reporter is sneaking in some opinion.
Well, that's the thing. Exactly. This is why I think we all have to be vigilant. I mean, we should have been, everybody should have been doing this once in a while, all along anyway, to be hyper-vigilant as things have progressed. In other words, pay attention to your URLs, address bar, number one, when you pull up an article.
Yeah, abc.com.co is not ABC News.
Right, and because that shit will fuck you up from the jump. And the type, the font, you know, the fonts are funny sometimes, but, you know, the New York
Comics,
Times.
Comic Sans is usually a pretty dead giveaway.
Pretty dead giveaway. We've all seen that one, you know. And the New York Times is falling off. You know, I'm like, I mean, seriously, see, back in the 80s, like when I grew up reading the New York Times, you know, when I was living in New York, the editor was such that there were spaces, the metro section. That's what Trump was always in, the metro section. He was always doing something stupid. But that was, like you say, it was totally separate from the opinion section. And everything was fact-checked. You know, it was really stringent. It was the paper of record. Maybe now, I'm not so sure, but it's all about, the money has shrunken, right? So they don't have enough. They don't have enough resources to. I don't think the people are proofreading their material either. Look at all these typos. I see typos in
let me just ask, and maybe this. I've never been evaluated for it. Sometimes I wonder if maybe I'm on the spectrum somewhere, because things like typos and mispronunciations, when you know that, I mispronounce things. And I try to go and learn about them or figure things, but do they like burn the skin of your mind when you see these things?
We're cut from the same cloth. We are. This is how we are, Bob. You and I. When we hear a word we do not know, it will burn a hole in you until you find out what that word means and how to use it. When you hear someone engage in malapropisms, it makes you cringe, doesn't it? Tell the truth.
Yes. It absolutely does.
See, because it should. That's the way I was brought up. I'm sorry. I was brought up by two educators. I had no choice. And, you know, but I mean, but after a while, it's habit. But it should be that way. Someone has to carry the torch. And I rarely meet my goal. And you know, when I email you, a lot of times I'm doing it from the phone with my fat ass fingers, and you know, it's hard. But you see, the standards have fallen, and that's why you brought it up like that. In the newspaper, that's what editors are for. How does this shit get passed? Before we had computers, it's easy now. My God. How do you let that shit go by? In a byline? I see typos in bylines. You know you do.
But there's an assumption, I think, that's made, and this is a curse of the computer age. Well, spell check will catch everything. Well, it won't necessarily. I'm about halfway tempted to apply to one of the local, just, you know, it just for a little, you know, pocket change or whatever. Okay, healthcare. Apply to the local TV station and say, look, I don't want a camera. I don't want any authority of much. I don't want to schedule anybody. I just want to be your copy editor and your proofreader. Here's a headline, and maybe this is one of those where you could kind of have an argument. Historical church vandalized in Boyd County.
Wait, no. Historic.
Thank you. Historical.
See, that's fucked up right there. Do you understand the children? God
now,
damn
this,
it.
This, now, this is a TV station that is actually in the Charleston market, which is on the large.
That's the capital.
That's the large side of small, or the small side of medium, but it's serving a viewing area of some several hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. That's the best.
And you don't think enough of your product to get the stuff that you're publishing that is the online face of what you do. You don't think enough of it to have somebody edit it who actually knows what... And the thing, you know, one of the things that a copy editor does is serve as a de facto teacher of people coming behind. Because,
right.
Because the purpose of a copy editor is to make sure that the story that the reporter is trying to tell is clearly conveying the information that the reporter intends to convey.
Guess what, Bob?
And
that won't get past the copy editor. You better clean it up. It won't get past, right?
Well, yeah, that's what, I mean, back in the day, blue pencils and stuff, that's what it was for. You circle it and you send it back, and hopefully you will never see that mistake come from that reporter again. And I can't tell you. That's why I say I wonder if it's just a little bit, you know, my brain's a little funny.
No,
I can't tell you where that happened inside my head. Except to say that, you know, you spend a lot of time writing a lot of papers, and then you go to work in an industry where people are looking at what you write. Every newscast I wrote at CNN got left in a basket, and I had an editor whose job was to look at the shit I was writing and make sure it was okay. And sometimes it would come back, and it would have little blue circles, not red, not -5, you can say this a better way. Say it, you blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't an insult, and it wasn't something to get angry about. It was that person's job reviewing my job.
And you remembered it. And you were like, you made note of it. Like, okay.
But you know what? Right. You know what? What I think really drove it home?
Mm-hmm.
3 years of law school. We accuse lawyers of gobbledygooking up the language. When in point of fact, most of the time, what lawyers are trying to do is to say with the greatest precision and accuracy to enunciate a concept in such a way that it can't be misunderstood by some boob down the road. Because, you know, if Jesus... The boobs ye have always with ye. How many problems do we have in this country that are actually created by the fact that certain assumptions were made by the framers of the Constitution, you know, along the lines of, well, only an illiterate, addle-pated fool could think this means anything other than what we think, what we're saying it means. And then, lo and behold, here we sit in the 21st century, and we're going, nah. Consider the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Well-regulated militia. That entire clause makes clear that the rest of it is subordinated to the well-regulated militia. Fat, dead Tony Scalia takes one look at it and says, we can just throw all that militia stuff out. Because I'm a constitutional originalist, and even though everybody owning guns was to be part of a well-regulated militia back when the originalism of the Constitution was in place, I don't like it. So here for a couple of milliseconds, I'm going to stop being a constitutional originalist, and I'm just going to engage in some goddamn judicial activism and chuck all that shit in the wind.
Yeah, that's what he did. He just defeated his own argument. Did you see his son on C-SPAN?
No.
Well, oh God, it's painful.
Another example, when the overwhelming weight of the law and the evidence became so profound as to make it impossible for the Supreme Court to look away from school desegregation, and they finally had to agree with Justice Harlan that Plessy versus Ferguson was a goddamn sickening disaster and a piece of virulent racism. What did the Supreme Court do in Brown versus Board of Education? Yes, they said schools had to be desegregated. And then they snuck that pernicious phrase in there with all deliberate speed. Deliberate means slow. So the Supreme Court in Brown versus Board of Education said that schools had to be segregated with all slow speed.
Well, look, the public schools, as we speak right now in the state that I reside, okay, minimally adequate. That's what public schools are deemed to. They have to be minimally adequate. Minimally adequate. Excuse me, I would like a minimally adequate hamburger from your fucked up establishment, please. Thank you.
There we go. But it's language is, and you know what, this is part of the curse of literacy. In a time. Okay, no. back in the age when all human wisdom was transmitted by memory, we had better memories. But the language was also transmitted with, or the information was also transmitted with extreme care given to not fucking up. Literacy comes along and everything changes. And nuance enters into the discussion. Consider, even though it's not Wednesday, this is just an excellent example of it. Consider the story in the book of Mark of the woman taken in adultery. No textual critic, no biblical scholar worth her salt will tell you that that's part of the original source text of the book of Mark. They will tell
and
you.
What did they say to him?
They will tell you that it was added by some subsequent scribe 100, 200, 300 years later. Because it made for a good story. Because it enhanced whatever message the scribe or the abbot who ordered the scribing wanted told. Yeah, there's an old joke, I've told it a million times on this program, but it's worth telling again. The story about the young novice who's gone to the monastery, and he wants to be a scribe, and so the abbot says, well, here, set to copying this passage from Mark, we'll see how your writing skills are. And he said, it's not Mark, but whatever. Some passage of church baloney, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the novice says, well, Abbot, if I'm going to copy, wouldn't it be best to copy from the original source? There might be mistakes in this. The abbot says, well, I mean, I guess we could do that. I mean, I've never seen any mistakes in here. Come on, let's go down in the catacombs and find the original. And so down the stairs they go, down deeper and deeper and deeper, and skulls on the walls and shit like that. And they've got their candles. And they finally blow the dust off the original of what it was he's supposed to copy. And the abbot opens it and begins reading and turning pages, and he gets to the passage he wanted copied, and he begins to weep. Pretty soon he's crying openly, and the tears are falling on the ancient vellum of the pages.
Okay.
And the young novice says, Father, what's wrong? And the abbot, with a look of shock and dismay and heartbreak, looks up and says, it says celebrate. Not
celebrate.
Not celibate. Celebrate.
Oh.
Maybe I told it wrong. But that shit really happens. And it's this imprecision of language that gets us in a... At one point, okay, you know, the preamble to the Constitution, as Flavio just pointed out, he said, Marty did, funny how Scalia's constitutional originalism only kicks in after Marbury versus Madison. And there's a truth in that, because Fat Dead Tony Scalia said in the past that most magnificent portion of the Constitution, the preamble, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, etc.
He said that
the preamble has no legal effect whatsoever. It is not law. It is not part of the Constitution. It's just decorative language. It's just a prefatory flourish at the beginning of the document.
Once again, he has put a hole in his own argument. He's supposed to be an originalist. That means you take the entire document and look at it as is, as if you were taking a screenshot of it.
You look at it as is at the time it was written.
Until it's not convenient for what the hell you want to
Right. He was a stinking hypocrite.
Who wanted
originalism as long as it meant that you, Todd, were 3/5 of a human being, but didn't want originalism if it meant that some white buddy of his couldn't have a goddamn grenade launcher in Washington, D.C.
But it was in the Constitution, Bob.
Yeah, but why? But Whitey McWhite-White ain't in no well-regulated militia with his grenade launcher either.
Well, the way you presented that argument, it's almost really airtight, because, I mean, really. But now it's too far gone. But what it does to me, I'll be honest with you, I'm very concerned right now about the judges, right? These judges that are being put in right now. I mean...
Well, I know you're concerned. Todd, I know you're concerned. I'm concerned too. And the next time you're concerned, don't go down and take your concerns out on Cletus at the Rippy Mart. Go find yourself some sparkle fart powered member of the Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade and take your concerns out on them. Because they're why.
You know what? I wasn't even going to ask Cletus anything when I went in there the other day. When he told me what he said about the Department of Education, you know, that told me a lot. I thought there's nowhere to go with him. You know, with this conversation, really. You know, we had a nice conversation for a little while, but he's getting too animated. He brought it up. These people, I'm so glad you triggered it. Okay, listen, I'm still trying to figure this out. Why do these people really, really hate Hillary Clinton? What did she do to these
people? She's a neoliberal shill, dude. She's an establishment neoliberal shill. No, okay, I shouldn't be such a dickhead about it.
No, I'm serious.
I am too, and that was a visceral response, and I apologize. Look, here's what they're upset about. And frankly, as compared between two opposing candidates for the Democratic nomination, I was upset about it too. And I can just tick them off. The killing of Gaddafi. Not that Gaddafi shouldn't have died, but the fact that she cackled about it.
Of course, that was terrible. It was awful. Absolutely.
Saying that she knew how to handle men who got off the reservation. The considerable, and you have to wonder where it came from. Looking back, I do. The considerable amount of controversy that was created over her. super predators comment. Okay. Because if you actually look at
the that's not the people I'm talking about that hate her.
I'm talking about the people who hate her that matter. The booger eaters, the maggots, they hate her for being Hillary Clinton because they've been taught since 1992 to hate her for being Hillary Clinton. There's no rhyme. There's no rhyme. There's no reason, and there is certainly no intellect involved in it.
Well, that's what I wanted to know, because I already know. I mean, there's a lot of reasons not to like her.
But the people who hated her who matter are the ones who said, "I can never vote for Hillary because of Berta Caceres." Okay, Hillary.
See, we're going Hillary, back to the Hillary, election. Hillary, what the hell are these people not understand?
Hillary,
you have to get with this, or you got to get with that.
Hillary fucked up Honduras. Okay. She did.
She fucked up a lot of shit. But so what? Look what we got. Look now. We got judges that are in place for fucking life. They goddamn had a person up there all the way up getting interviewed who never tried a goddamn case. What? That's like taking a slave off a fucking plantation and saying, you know what? You should be president. I can't read. It don't fucking matter. What the fuck?
I've only got the most beautiful words. I've got beautiful words and the best people. Yeah, okay, you know, that guy's pretty much the same as Hillary, and Hillary's the same as him. Hillary's going to start World War III. Well, here.
Yeah, that's Warner Brothers.
Under Hillary's going to start World War III, let me read you another paragraph, may I?
Please.
The Nuclear Posture Review also expands the circumstances in which the U.S. might use its nuclear arsenal to include a response to a non-nuclear attack that caused mass casualties or was aimed at critical infrastructure or nuclear command and control sites. Now, before you say anything, Todd, let's take a moment. The Nuclear Posture Review is going to be made public after Donnie Dimwit delivers his State of the Union address. So that kind of means you can expect some language, some serious saber rattling inside the State of the Union address. And that's at the end of this month. So we're kind of on a timeline here.
That makes sense.
Let's go back to this language for a minute. The U.S. might use its nuclear arsenal as a response to a non-nuclear attack that caused mass casualties. In other words, if there were another September 11th, 2001... We might use a nuke in response to it. Or was aimed at critical infrastructure. Critical infrastructure? Well, an airport? Somebody with a dynamite vest bombs an airport? So maybe we'll lob a nuke at, Iran.
Okay. You know what?
Do you see how terrifying this gets in how big a goddamn hurry?
Do you remember I'm not going to go into that. But yeah, the drumbeat of war is no more drumbeat now. They're already letting you know, okay, this is what's going to happen. And I think they're already like redoing these announcements, you know, how to get ready, you know, if something happens, if you're in a prone area for radiation, if there's a nuclear attack. I mean, this is so unnecessary. I mean, every about maybe 10, 12 years, maybe a little less, maybe a little more, North Korea, you know, they make a lot of noise because they want money or food or whatever. They want something. And they think differently than we do. And, you know, you're talking, and I love this conversation about language and punctuation, because especially when you're talking about the law. because it goes back to that lawyer dog stuff. It means everything. Paperwork errors. I mean, people die over paperwork errors. You know, it means something.
We can joke. Look, I had the story last night about the magistrate in Kanawha County who fucked up the paperwork and two people got all dead. One guy he didn't issue an arrest warrant for, and he was shot by the next morning. The other guy, he fucked up the release papers on his domestic, and the guy hung himself in his cell. Now, what killed that guy, the bullet or the magistrate fucking up the paperwork?
Yeah.
Well, a good lawyer would argue that the bullet was an intervening and superseding cause.
Yeah, but it's why. How did you even end up? How did that person end up in that situation? Well, not in the first place, but in the second place, like you're saying. You know, it's funny how that system works because it has a lot of implications. You know, a lot of implications. But, yeah, you know, language, you know, so these tweets, you see, these tweets, in other words, how many times, I thought about this the other day, how many times has this person tweeted out something positive or let's say the natural disaster, everyone please, you know, gather water, blah, 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 just something normal. Just even fucking make it look like you're goddamn normal. You know,
look,
no.
I think you're, if you'll forgive me saying so, Todd, you're leaping past something important.
What?
What the fuck is he doing on Twitter at all? Okay. It's one thing to have the @POTUS Twitter handle, and that's whoever's in the office. And there's somebody in the communications department who's got the device attached to that account. Or ride shotgun on it.
Mm-hmm.
How many times did you wake up that Barack Obama personally had tweeted some message, you know, criticizing a rival or an enemy? Or talking about how awesome the coverage was on MSNBC? See, even his promotional tweets are arguably unconstitutional and illegal. The president is supposed to be above the tawdry day-to-day and hurly-burly of hawking products.
I'm glad you brought that up because I hope Mueller is. I mean, there's so much that's obvious. The obstruction is obvious, and the emoluments clause, if it's never been enforced, it's only because it has never been flouted as it is
a trial court recently said the only venue with the constitutional power to resolve emoluments issues is Congress. I personally think that's a bullshit distinction because the Constitution says what the Congress can do if the president violates the emoluments clause. But once Congress fails to act after a reasonable period of time, then the courts have to have jurisdiction or else it's a wrong without a remedy. And the courts, under principles of equity, equity will not permit a wrong without a remedy.
That's a good argument.
I don't know. It's probably not a good argument, or it would have been argued, but or maybe it was.
Congress advocated their duty. Because look, it's not People from Republican administrations from the ethics. Remember, the first thing these motherfuckers did was get away. They said, "Nope, we don't need any ethics." First of all, Congress threw away their ethics board, if I'm not mistaken. Didn't they do that from the fucking first day of session?
In the House, I think, yeah.
In the House.
I remember.
That's something that
was... we're on a year now, so I remember something like that.
I really remember it because I was so shocked. I was like, okay, they're setting themselves up to do whatever the hell they want. When nobody investigating what they're up to. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I was just so flabbergasted, you know. Now look at what we're dealing with.
Well, and see, I just got an email from Bill in Allentown. He said, "Hey, Bob, Iran gets nuked. It's the beginning of World War III. Doesn't matter who pulls the trigger, U.S. or Israel." Well, guess what? Let me share a little bit more with you from this Guardian story.
Go ahead.
A guy named Wolfsthal, who had been involved, John Wolfsthal, special assistant to Barack Obama on arms control and nonproliferation, had viewed the previous, much more terrifying, scary draft. He said, "My read is this is a walk back from how extreme it was early on. It doesn't have as much terrible stuff in it as it did originally, but it's still bad." So imagine how bad it was. But "What I've been told by the people who wrote the thing was that they were trying to do was send a clear deterrent message to Russians, the North Koreans, and the Chinese. And there's pretty good moderate but strong language that makes clear that any attempt by Russia or North Korea to use nuclear weapons would result in a massive consequence for them. And I think that's actually moderate, centrist, and probably very much needed. But here's the deal. We lob so much as one first strike nuke, and it's game goddamn on, okay? Because that language about how any attempt by Russia or North Korea to use nuclear weapons would result in massive consequence, that sword's got two edges. Any attempt by us, because we got one, Russia's bound to have one, China's got one.
Pakistan.
Any attempt by us to use a nuclear weapon will result in a massive retaliation against us. And we have a White House that is fucking thinking about it, okay? Now, if that doesn't turn your bowels to fucking liquid, I don't know. And look, I don't get behind the microphone every night to scare people. This shit scares me.
It should. It should. And this is the wrong person at the wrong time.
And remember, I don't care what some military brass might say. They're all oath sworn that if Trump says shoot, their job is to salute and shoot. You ever seen the movie Gene Hackman and Denzel Washington, Crimson Tide, about a nuclear submarine?
No.
Back in the 90s, great movie. It comes down to a question of, okay, you've sworn an oath that if you're given an order, you'll follow the fucking order. And that's how civilian control of the military works. Go watch 7 days in May.
Mm-hmm.
That's a military deciding that it knows better than the civilian control of the military does in terms of policy. What do we want? You know, we're talking about wanting a 25th Amendment remedy, and we want psychological evaluations for the president. And I do. I think it's... But by the same token, I have to ask the question.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when it gets used on one of ours? Because if you consider the Electoral College and how it has stopped popularly elected Democrats from becoming president.
Mm-hmm.
And if you consider how the 22nd Amendment has only stopped, realistically speaking, Democrats from reaching a third term, then you have to kind of come to the conclusion that all of these so-called checks on the presidency only wind up being checks on Democrat presidents.
You know what? You're absolutely right. Isn't that, that's crazy. You're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. Isn't that something? Even with Nixon, that, you know, no. And it was Clinton over sex. We're not even talking about being a Russian agent in the White House. We're talking about sex. Isn't that crazy?
Right.
But Bob,
Marty tries to mitigate by saying, of course, I was only following orders, got several Nazis hung by the neck until dead after Nuremberg. That's because they were Nazis. Understand something. Until such time as there is a force that is stronger than us that can impose its will upon us, the Nuremberg decisions only apply to small or smaller states over whom we can exercise control.
Well, that's true. That's a dime. Let me make sure we're on the same page here, though. So it appears that really the only people who are running the country right now, I mean, we're like, it is the military. Think about it. The generals are running the country. They have to be. That's what's going on right now. What do you think?
No, because this review was occasioned by things that the president wanted. He wants to use nukes. Therefore, they're trying to set up a schema in which he can use them because he wants to see something
right.
Go bang.
So if you look at a scale, so everything is balanced.
That stupid fucker probably that stupid fucker doesn't.
Everything's balanced.
He didn't understand the nuclear triad, and he doesn't understand the system by which a nuclear weapon is launched. That fucker actually wants a button on his desk. He wants to be the guy who gets to say, they die now. Push.
Do you remember he already said I had to set off a few bombs? Remember? Remember the mother? They had to have him set off a few bombs.
Yeah, they gave him the mother of all bombs to keep him from fucking nuking him.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Let's look at him. Right. And then remember, two failed, like SEAL or Special Forces operations where he was advised not to go ahead with it. But he went ahead with it anyway, and they both failed.
Right.
You haven't heard much since. So he's always had this propensity. This is what he wants. This is him. So we could be in a lot of trouble. Now we got generals are in the White House. This is what I was trying to say. With this character and generals in the White House, the scale now is tilted towards military action.
Yes.
You know,
why do you think on Friday I was talking about make sure you got a two-week supply of water? Make sure you got
some beans
and some rice and some cooking oil and maybe a Coleman camp stove and a few bottles of propane. No, I'm not talking about surviving a nuclear holocaust. No, there's no such thing. But the ancillary effects of even us nuking somebody else can have profound effects. And by the way, we are smack dab in the middle of the fourth anniversary of the poisoning of 300,000 people in the nine-county region surrounding Kanawha County, West Virginia. Eight-county
area.
Oh,
God, yeah.
This is that's tonight. That's this. Today is the anniversary. And we celebrated the anniversary today here in Fayette County by having the biggest part of Fayette County, West Virginia's public water supply system go offline because of a water main.
What?
Break. Yeah, because of a water main break.
Oh my God!
When I went down for cheap blood work Tuesday, they didn't have running water at the clinic. And then I had to cross the river. They didn't have running water. They didn't have running water at the sheets. Nobody had running water.
Oh, irony. Oh, my God. It's insane, Bob. That, I can't even. Wow. I can't. Whew.
Yeah. Hey, Todd, I got to get out of here, my friend, but it's been a lovely conversation. It always is.
Thanks, Bob, man. Take care.
All right, later. Bye now. It's our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina. Stan, note just rolled in from Kitty in Boston. Editor needed, Boston, Massachusetts. Bob, you say you're interested in finding yourself a copy editing job? 7 News Boston could use a man like you. I was just on their website checking out a report on a terrible fire in Lynn, Massachusetts, and this is how the story ended. Quote, while investigators belief, B-E-L-I-E-F, the cause of the fire was cooking-related, and investigating remains ongoing. And investigating remains ongoing. Okay, how about, I know investigating and belief is the part that you leap on, but how about we, blue pencil remains ongoing, and change that to continues. Kitty says, I see this kind of sloppiness all the time on news sites. I can hardly believe it sometimes. It's all over the place. It is all over the place. And it changes the meaning of things. And that matters. But no matter how much it matters, I got to get out of here because I'm overtime now. So thanks, everybody. We will begin the program tomorrow with a, oh my God, $500 fundraising goal. But thank you. Thank you, Robert, for jumping in with that $30 challenge. Maybe some folks in the overnight crew, the podcast gang, what have you, the folks who don't listen live, maybe they'll hear your challenge and maybe they'll respond. And I'll let you know tomorrow evening at the beginning of prayer meeting Wednesday. May have to lock the doors and make everybody drink tea and coffee. Nah, I won't do that. We had to bring in one of those van-loaded, no, it was a mess. But anyway, thanks, everybody, for sharing your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you so very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.